Welcome to another episode of Before You Kill Yourself with your host, Leo Flowers. I am Leo Flowers. Right now I'm fighting a head cold, and so I may sound more nasally than usual. Thank you for tuning in. Today we're going to talk about unlocking the power of sleep. I give webinars to accountants, and a lot of times at the end of my webinar, there's a Q&A section. Sometimes I don't get to all the questions, and so I ask them to send me all their questions, and I'll answer it in the podcast form. So today we have a lot of questions from my Unlocking the Power of Sleep, 12 Essential Steps for Improved Rest and Rejuvenation. So I'll give you guys the gist of how to improve your sleep from the webinar, and then I will get right into the questions. And I may inadvertently be answering some of the questions as I'm giving you a quick recap of how to unlock the power of sleep. The basics of a good night's sleep are create a cave. So you want your room to be cold, 69 degrees, dark, blackout curtains, no ambient lighting at all. And you also want it to be cozy. I mean, I forget what the third thing is, like cold, dark, and quiet. That's what it is. So you want it to be quiet. So making sure that cut the fan off, the AC is off, as quiet as you can get it. Now, if you go, it's hot, I need the AC on or I can't sleep, right? And especially if I'm talking about setting a room to 69 degrees, put in air plugs. So I sleep with eye mask to make sure I'm getting complete darkness, earplugs, set my room to 65 degrees. I sleep on my back because we found that sleeping on your back is really the optimal place for us to rest. Because if we sleep on our side, it throws our spine out of alignment, our hips out of alignment, which then can cause hip, knee, back problems in the future. So think about when you are laying on a couch sideways watching Netflix, right? After a while, you start to adjust and shift. Why? Because your back or your hips or your knees start to bother you, or your neck starts to bother you. So you find yourself periodically shifting from side to side or adjusting because your neck hurts or this hurts. The same thing happens when you sleep on your side. When you sleep, your body is constantly adjusting. And every time you have to adjust, you're actually bringing yourself out of that deep, restful sleep that you want. When we lay on our back and our spine is neutral, then we don't have to make those adjustments. The only way you would have to make adjustments sleeping on your back is, one, you're not used to sleeping on your back, and we'll talk about what to do for that in a minute. And then, two, your bed is uncomfortable. It's too soft. So this works primarily with a firm mattress. If you have a mattress that's too soft to the point where you're almost like a taco because, you know, your chest or by your knees, it just sinks and sags in the middle. Sleeping in your back or on your side, they're both going to, over time, cause some type of hip, back, or knee issues or even neck issues, right? So that's the basic gist of it is creating a cave, cold, quiet, dark, sleeping on your back, wear an eye mask if you have to, put in earplugs. And then also, if you're having sleep issues, get a sleep test. That's the first thing that I recommend to everyone. Get a sleep test. I myself got a sleep test because I snore and I also stopped breathing in my sleep. When I got the sleep test, it told me that I have sleep apnea, which means that I stop breathing 177 times every night, according to my sleep test, right? Now, everyone's sleep apnea is not as severe. Some people don't stop breathing that many times. But for me, it is quite severe, right? So think about that. The past 45 years, I have not had a good night's sleep. And now I use a mandibular device that your dentist or your doctor can use for you. Some people use a CPAP, right? But once again, for you to get the sleep test, you have to talk to your primary care doctor and say, hey, I'm having trouble sleeping. I'd like to get a sleep test. And they will recommend that for you. And then your dentist will get involved and determine, your dentist and your doctor hopefully will work together to determine if you need a CPAP machine or if you need a mandibular device. And there's some other devices out there, but I haven't used those. But it would be up to you to discover what works best for you and, you know, what works in your budget and what you're willing to do. I know some people who have a CPAP machine and they don't want to use it. They go, oh, it's just too uncomfortable. I get that. But for me, the mandibular device, although there are some issues with it throwing my jaw out of alignment a bit, I sleep like a baby now. I sleep so much better. My mood is regulated. I've been able to keep 50 pounds off. That when people ask me, because if you're a first-time listener, I used to weigh 246 pounds. I'm down about 193, 195. The biggest shift for me was conquering my sleep, getting a good night's sleep. So important. That's why they call it beauty sleep. It allows you to rest and rejuvenate. So if you're struggling with losing weight, I would look at your sleep first. And if the person next to you, maybe you sleep fine, but the person next to you snores and that's keeping you up, well, then you have to do something about that, because there was an article about talking about sleep divorces where people are like, you snore too loud, it's interfering with my sleep, and so they're sleeping in separate bedrooms, right? I mean, the privilege of having two bedrooms, right? So my point is, sleep is really the foundation of our health and well-being and our mood and being able to regulate our moods, especially people who struggle with bipolar or depression or anxiety or ADHD. If we're not getting a full night's, and I want to emphasize that it's not really just about sleep, it's about rest, giving ourselves ample time to rest on a daily basis, whether that's taking a 5-minute nap or 10-minute nap. Rest is so important. All right, so those are the basics. Get a sleep test, one, and then make sure the environment in your room is cold, dark, and quiet. So let's get into these questions, right? Number one, any suggestions on how to stay asleep during the night? I have no issues falling asleep, but I keep waking up. Now, there's a few different reasons why this might be happening. And so there's no like one direct answer. One of the reasons you might keep waking up is insulin spikes. If you eat too close to bedtime, that's going to cause an insulin spike about 5 hours later, and that will wake you up, right? So I suggest, you know, for myself, I stop eating at 6 p.m. and I go to bed at 11 a.m. I have a very slow metabolism. I know some people who can eat close to bedtime and have no issues with waking up. So you'll have to experiment with what is your range for eating that doesn't cause the insulin spikes or any issues. The other reason why you might be waking up in the middle of the night is to pee. You might be drinking too much liquids, right? The third reason is medication. Make sure your meds aren't waking you up or causing any issues. See if there's any side effects with your medication. The fourth one is you may not be doing the brain dump. You know, in my other episodes, I talk about the importance of journaling before bed. And if you go to bed with all these thoughts and worries and anxieties and you have nowhere to channel it, then that's going to wake you up. So notice why you're waking up. Is it racing thoughts? Are there worries that are waking you up? Are you waking up in a cold sweat? What's waking you up in the middle of the night? The other thing that could be waking you up is sleeping on your side. Because remember, we talked about how if you sleep on your side, then that can cause hip, back, knee, neck pain, right? The pain of that could be waking you up. So if you're sleeping on an uncomfortable mattress or in an uncomfortable environment, maybe your room is too hot or too cold, that could be waking you up. So there's a number of reasons why you might be waking up in the middle of the night. And I'd really have to talk to you and troubleshoot to figure out what those are, right? Second question. Is there a magic number of sleeping hours, or is it by individual? Definitely by individual. We know from science and experience that the older we get, the less sleep we typically need. You know, think about a baby sleeps most of the day. Teenagers can sleep. I remember when I was a teenager, 14 hours, I could sleep forever, right? But then, you know, you look at your grandma and she's up at like 4 a.m. shuffling about, right? So the older we get, typically the less sleep that we need. So there's not a magic number. It really is about, if you are in your 40s, I'd say anywhere from 7 hours. If you find yourself getting groggy or needing caffeine or sugar in the middle of the day, either it's because your sleep quality is poor, like you snore, you have sleep apnea, or you just need to take a nap in the middle of the day. And we know that there's so many cultures that have a siesta and nap during the day, but in America, it's really kind of frowned upon. It's like work, 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 work. But like places like Japan, they encourage sleeping and napping, even on a train. They're like, go to sleep, get some rest. It's a sign that you work really hard. So it's interesting how different cultures view sleeping and napping differently. And some it's like, oh, you're lazy, you should get back to work. And others are like, oh, you must be working so hard that you're just tired. So it's all about how you're framing it. Does Ambien prevent deep sleep? Yes. Any sleeping medication, melatonin, Ambien, CBD, they are not sleeping pills. They say they are, but what they really are sedatives. And what a sedative does is sedates you. It gets you into a light sleep period, but not deep sleep. So you may pass out. Ambien helps you to pass out like you would from a carb coma or from drinking too much, but it prevents you from getting into deep sleep. So stay away from the Ambiens and the melatonins and the CBDs unless you really, really need like a one-off, you know. And when I say one-off, I'm literally talking like 1 to 3 times a year, not every single night, because then your body will get used to the Ambien and will stop producing melatonin, and then you'll be dependent on Ambien. So because we know that there are people who become addicted to sleeping pills. So I would avoid and find natural ways and try to really discover what is the true cause of your sleep. It could, and going back to when I talked about making your room a cave, from experience or from the clients that I've worked with, I've discovered that for some people, they need sound when they go to sleep, whether it's white noise or train tracks or the TV on, because quiet, too much quiet or silence at night can trigger their PTSD. I know this from military vets and people who've come from war-torn countries. The quiet is a sign that doom is looming, right? So for those people, we might start them off with, going to bed with sound and then maybe being able to wean them off over time as they start to feel safe in their new environment. So there is no one-size-fits-all. It's not like everyone needs this and everyone needs that, but these are just general statements that I'm making. However, with the Ambien, that is scientific in terms of it doesn't allow you to get into deep sleep. It prevents you from doing that. It's a sedative. It gets you in a light sleep. And you don't want to be dependent on that. Next question. How do you feel about listening to a podcast to lull oneself to sleep? I've done that historically. Sometimes Michelle and I will listen to a story bedtime podcast at night. Sometimes I listen to my own podcast. I find my voice quite soothing at night. But if you may find that you're in the phase, especially like when you're grieving something or in a transition where there's just so much out of your control, there's so much unfamiliar, and you just feel like you need a familiar voice to kind of lull you to sleep, that's perfectly fine. But also be aware that it's just something that is a phase, right? You might need that every night for a week or a month or 3 months. But don't feel like, oh, because I've been doing this, I need to keep doing this to sleep. Be aware that at some point you may outgrow that. You may find that you don't need that voice to tuck you into bed anymore, right? It was just something to get you. It's almost like a teddy bear or, you know, talking to a friend on a phone as you're falling asleep. You're not going to need that every night, but you may need it to get you through a particular period in your life. And that's perfectly normal and acceptable. How much deep sleep should we get each night? Ideally, your body is going to determine that, but you're looking at like 90, you're looking at that stage three sleep is about 90 minutes, right? And you can typically get through two stage three cycles depending on how much, how long you're sleeping for. So you're looking at 3 hours of stage three sleep, right? So there's four cycles, but we can go through that two times in a night. But don't fixate on that. Don't fixate on how much deep sleep I should get. Fixate, be more focused on having a routine, getting to bed at the same time every night, and waking up about the same time every night. Now, you can't really control what time you're going to wake up in the morning, but you can definitely, but you have more control over what time you're going to bed to rest. So focus on what is within your control and let go of the rest and then just hope that you're getting enough deep sleep. But if you don't get the deep sleep, you know, you have to let that go and, you know, start all over the next night, right? Don't beat yourself up over it. I've always been a very good sleeper and fall asleep very fast. Does falling asleep very easily always indicate a problem in sleep hygiene? I'm going to assume that you mean the opposite. Does not falling asleep very easily indicate a problem in sleep hygiene? So people who fall asleep very fast, I know some people who can do that. They just pass out immediately. If you feel rested, the key thing is, do you feel rested when you wake up in the morning? That's what's important. So whether you fall asleep very quickly or it takes you 20 minutes to fall asleep, what's valuable is you're waking up feeling rested, rejuvenated, and ready to go. And if not, then you need to look at your sleep hygiene. But if you feel great when you wake up, then, you know, hats off to you. That's awesome that you can fall asleep very fast. I know I go through periods where my head hits the pillow and I'm out in a few minutes. And then there are other times where it might take me 20 minutes or even an hour. Sometimes I lay there for 20 minutes and I get back out of bed and journal, read, or exercise, or stretch, not exercise, and then get back in bed, and then I'm fine. Next question. I have trouble falling asleep and staying asleep if I don't take Benadryl before going to bed. What are your thoughts on that? Once again, Benadryl is a sedative. It's preventing you from getting into a deep quality sleep, and I would look at what's contributing to you struggling to fall asleep and stay asleep. Is it your diet? Sometimes we struggle to fall asleep and stay asleep because we haven't done enough in our day, meaning like we haven't, our bodies are meant to move and exercise and be engaged, as are our minds. And so if we don't, it's kind of like think about your body and your mind as a dog. If you don't take your dog for a walk, if you don't get it enough exercise and enough stimulation, it's going to be hard to get that dog to sleep at night. Kids are the same way. The kids don't work out and exercise and do homework and do engaging things and socialize, it's going to be hard to get them to sleep at night. Every parent knows you got to keep those kids up and running and moving and doing things so that they can sleep at night. Adults are no different. So I would look at your life and see Am I engaging enough in life? Maybe it's a medical issue. You know, there's a thyroid check that needs to be done. But this is why it's so important to work with a coach and go to thrivewithleo.com so that we can identify what's happening a lot faster than what you could by yourself. It sounds, all these things sound so easy to do, but one, is not fun. It's boring to do it by yourself. And two, to have someone objectively really looking at all the different life, is it physical, is it emotional, is it social, is it mental, is it spiritual? Like all these different things could be contributing to why we are struggling with sleep and feeling focused and finding meaning in our life. Next question. I heard that naps should be no more than 20 minutes to get to the non-REM. To get to the non-REM, 10 minutes fully. Plus it won't whack your circadian rhythm. I hear that if you have the wakey-wakey at 3 a.m. or whatever, never look at your clock. Okay. So let me rephrase the question. How long should you nap for? It's basically what he's asking. I recommend anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes. You would have to play around with this. For myself, I find that 20 minutes can be too long sometimes. So 5 minutes for me has been a sweet spot. I set my alarm for 5. I like close my eyes. Actually, I set it for 5 minutes and 30 seconds to give myself time to kind of just get nestled in there. And then I'm good to go. So it's not about falling asleep for that nap time. It's just about resting the body, resting the mind, letting go of everything, and giving our bodies a chance to reset, right? So I like 5 minutes. Sometimes you might feel like you need 10 minutes. Like if I had a very long day and I was only going to be able to get one nap in, I might go with the 20-minute route. But some people who fall asleep a lot faster, they may find they're getting into that deep sleep already at 20. So you really want to play around, but no longer than 20 is the point. You don't want to go longer than 20. Yes. And then the second part of your question, if you wake up at 3 a.m., never look at your clock. Agreed. If you wake up in the middle of the night, typically it's to go use the restroom, go do that, and come back to bed, right? If you wake up in the middle of the night and you don't have to use the restroom and you find yourself like with thoughts or achy, get up, do a little reading, some light fiction, a little journaling, or stretching your body out. And you don't want to be out of bed longer than 20 minutes, right? So about 20 minutes of reading, maybe read a few pages, journal a few things, some thoughts that are coming, whatever ruminating thoughts are popping up, and then get right back in bed. And then you find that, because sometimes if you're waking up at the same time every night, that's your brain trying to talk to you. It's like, yo, you haven't talked to us all day because you've been so busy, or you've just been scrolling or numbing out. And so 3 a.m. is the only chance that your brain feels like it can talk to you. And that's what's happening for a lot of people, right? Are there tips from changing your habit from sleeping on your side? Yes, I definitely have a tip. Because I'm typically a side sleeper. And the way that I learned to sleep on my back was I would sleep on my back. I would get in bed and then lay on my back for about a minute or 3 minutes. And then I would just turn on my side and go to sleep. So basically every night I was kind of increasing the length of time I was sleeping on my back to get my body used to sleeping on my back. And then the other thing I was doing was when I was taking a 5 minute nap in the middle of the day, or at whatever period of time, I would do that on my back. So I was just slowly teaching my body that, hey, it's okay to sleep on my back. It's comfortable to sleep on my back, and let's get used to this. So, you know, and I did that for over the course of like a couple weeks. And now I sleep on my back, no problem, right? Now, there are times like in the morning when I wake up where I turn on my side, but that's after I wake up in the morning and I just like want to get cozy for a second. What about letting your body wake up naturally without an alarm clock? That's the next question. Obviously, that would be the best way to do it, right? And the there, but it's you're retired. So I love this. If you're retired, right, or if you have this, if you have the time, let your body naturally wake up. Because there, especially with daylight savings time and all those different things, your body knows what's best for it. And so there's going to be times where your body wants 7 hours of sleep or wants 9 hours of sleep. Let it wake up naturally, right? Without the alarm clock. That, I mean, that's obviously the best way to do it. That's the way people have done it, you know, throughout history. They were kind of waking up with the sun, right? At dawn, when that little light came through, or they heard the roosters roostering, that's how they were waking up. So if you could wake up naturally without the alarm clock, hats off to you. That's beautiful. I know, like, when I'm on vacation, I don't set my alarm clock. I do try to still go to bed at the same time, but in terms of when I wake up, I just, you know, I wake up whenever my body wants to wake up. I trust it to know what it needs that particular day. What about white noise? We kind of talked about that earlier. Some people need it. If you feel like you need white noise, do that. Do that for 7 days and then experiment. Go to bed one night. Be like, you know what? Tonight, I'm going to try it without white noise just to see what it feels like, right? And if you enjoy it, then go, oh, let me just try it for 2 days. And so you can slowly wean your way off of the white noise. So there is no yes, do it. No, don't do it. It's really about why are you doing it? If it makes you feel safe and secure, you know, especially if you live by yourself, you may need that white noise to kind of make the place feel a bit more cozy. And then also you're not picking up all the ambient sounds from your house that can sound scary at night, right? So it can kind of help drown that out. I'm all for it. Whatever helps you to sleep and get that deep sleep. And as long as it's not interfering with you getting deep sleep, and it's not, you know, also bothering your spouse. What can you recommend to help someone to stop sleeping with their mouth open? I would say, you know, you can tape your mouth shut, honestly. And there's videos that talk about that, and I've tried that, taping your mouth shut. I don't know why there's some people who sleep with their mouth open. Chances are they're congested. So I would go to an ENT, an ear, nose, and throat doctor to look at what is happening and why they're breathing through their mouth instead of their nose. Chances are they have a deviated septum or some type of nasal blockage. But if that's not it, if it's all open and wide and they're still sleeping with their mouth open, I would definitely tape your lips shut. And the reason why you want to do that is because when we sleep with our mouth open, that allows for more bacteria to get in, and it increases your chances of getting sick, right? When we breathe in through our nose, we have our nose hairs that can capture. This is the purpose of nose hairs. They are our first line of defense against any bacteria that's trying to get in. If you're breathing through your mouth, you don't have throat hairs, right? So it's getting straight into your system. Next question, what do you do if you have negative thoughts that keeps creeping back in your mind while you're trying to fall asleep? This goes back to journaling. Do a journal dump before you go to sleep. And then also get some help. Talk to somebody about it. Be like, hey, yeah, a lot of times these negative thoughts that keep surfacing is because we're not doing anything about it. We're trying to avoid it or suppress it, or we have shame around it. Instead of talking to a therapist, talking to a friend, journaling, you know, calling the 988 number, going to thrivewithleo.com, like talk about it with someone or at the very least write it down. But it's showing up again. Because we're not addressing it in a way that it wants to be addressed. So take action, right? Be preemptive about it, and or schedule it. You know, this is the time to, even if you don't have a therapist, look for a therapist now, because it could take a very long time to find a therapist, to find that person to talk to, or talk to a stranger about it. You know, I think a lot of times we think we just have to talk to professionals and only they can guide us. And as much as I'd love for you to go to thrivewithleo.com so that we can work together and really get to the root of these thoughts that are troubling you, you could talk to your cashier, talk to a child, talk to anyone. It's just about getting it out there so you don't feel like you have to keep this a secret and then walk around with that shame, right? Next question, what is the right sleep schedule for people who work graveyard shift or night owls? Oh, the right sleep schedule. There is no right sleep schedule except to sleep. That is such a challenging. I used to work graveyard at an internet cafe, and I've dated nurses who work graveyard. It's tough. You're going to put on weight typically working graveyard because you're snacking to kind of keep the fuel going. And so you really got to find what works for you, because there's some people who work graveyard and they have kids. So they get off work, they come home, they drive the kids to school, and then they can get to sleep. Some people don't have kids, so they get off work, then they come home and they go to sleep. Or some people will work the graveyard and then come home and then start running errands and then go to sleep 8 to 9 hours before they have to go back into work. So whatever works for you. I don't know what your lifestyle is. I don't know what the scheduling it is. But as long as you have a schedule, that's what's important, is consistency. It doesn't matter what the schedule is or what the routine is, as long as there is one and your body will adapt. The next question, what mandibular device do I use? Now, I go to a guy called the Snore Doctor. He's located here in San Diego. If you go to snoredoctor.com or thesnoredoctor.com, he's in San Diego. Dr. Bennett is his name. And it is not a brand. It's not something you can buy off of Amazon. He actually had to create a mold for my teeth for the mandibular device. So you cannot buy this off the market. You have to go through a doctor who will custom make a mold for your jaw. Yeah, especially with something like this, you don't want this off the rack, okay? You want to get it custom made to your jaw and your teeth to prevent any issues down the road. Next question, what would you recommend to do if someone wakes up in the middle of the night and can't go back to sleep? We've already discussed that. Why do people usually feel tired after me? Okay, so last question. Why do I usually feel tired after a meal? Great question. Typically, you feel tired after a meal is because too many carbs, too much sugar, right? So you get that. This happened for me, you know, Thanksgiving. I would stuff my face with all of the stuffing, the pies, the cakes, the potato salad, just carb, carb, carb. And then I would pass out for a good hour to wake up and then start to cycle all over again. So if you want to prevent that, and you might also be passing out because you're tired, right? If you have to wake up early and if you're not getting a quality night's sleep and then you have to wake up early, and then you're drinking caffeine to kind of keep you going, you're going to experience a crash at some point, right? Especially if you have a carby breakfast like pancakes and things like that, you're going to crash at some point. Carb crashes, not car crashes, carb, C-A-R-B, crashes are very real. So yeah, they can definitely lead you to feeling tired. So how should we eat? What's the best way to eat? I don't say should. The best way to eat to prevent the carb crash is you want to go protein, fat, fiber. Protein, fat, fiber. So what does that look like? Salmon, right? High protein, fat, also, and then mixed vegetables with a salad. So you have your protein, your fat, and your fiber. And that's going to be very filling, and it's going to prevent you from feeling tired after your meal. Your lunch, dinner could be turkey, which is protein and fat. And then once again, some type of vegetables, and then salad. Breakfast, same thing. You could have eggs with vegetables and a salad. So there are different ways that you can incorporate protein, fat, and fiber into your diet, and in a way that's tasty for you. That's typically how I eat, and that's also how I've been able to consistently keep my weight off outside of managing my sleep, getting that sleep test. So to wrap all this up, the very first thing I would do is, one, look at if you're taking medications, see if your medications are potentially impacting your sleep. Two, get a sleep test, and your primary doctor can do that. Three, create an environment. Make sure the environment in which you're sleeping in is conducive for sleep. It's cold, it's dark, it's quiet. Your mattress is firm enough for you to sleep on your back. It doesn't sag in the middle. And then four, making sure that you're really engaging yourself throughout the day. You're getting enough exercise, movement, even mental engagement. Your brain is actively solving problems or dealing with challenges. You're not just passively consuming media and food, and not really. Our brain needs to do some work also. So engaging your brain, engaging your body, taking them out for a walk. Take them dogs out for a walk. Get them involved. And then fifth, looking at your caffeine intake, right? You might be more sensitive to caffeine than you think. And six, get off get off the sedatives. They're sedatives. They're not sleeping pills. There's no such thing as a sleeping pill. Every pill is a sedative. They're all sedatives. I said it. That's right. And even if your doctor is like, no, it's a sleeping pill, it's a sedative. It will prevent you from getting into a deep sleep. All right. It just helps you to pass out. And that is, and that's not what we want. So if all of this, if you're looking for a way to start and you want someone to be a partner in this with you, then go to thrivewithleo.com. Let you and I figure this out together, because what we'll discover is that the sleep is just a part of what our challenges are, right? If you were having interpersonal conflicts with our loved ones, with our family and our friends, trouble resolving conflict, or just finding meaning in our life, right? Or just the psychological pain or emotional pain of what we're experiencing through different mediums, whether at work or at home. And if you go to thrivewithleo.com, we can work together and get you out of pain, get you into purpose, and move you towards prosperity. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, this podcast is not a substitute for you calling the 988 or any of the other 800 numbers. You can chat, talk, text. You can go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching. Let's get to tomorrow together.